From the early 50s until now, no one does it better than the Platter.
Oh, yes, I'm the great pretender. Heavenly shades of night are falling. It's twilight time.
Only you can make all this world seem right. Only you can make the darkness bright. In blue, with the world far away, and your lips close to mine.
Welcome to our special tribute to the Platters, brought to you in part by Fate Magazine. We are broadcasting from Las Vegas and the office of Gene Bennett. Gene was there when the Platters started back in 1953. Tony Williams, David Lynch, Alex Hodge, and Herb Reed were the original Platters, signed by manager Buck Ram. Gene worked for Buck Ram. Started off, really, as a volunteer, ended up being a partner in Personality Productions, and was very instrumental over the years, and still is, when it comes to booking the Platters. You know, the interesting thing, Buck Ram originally met the Platters where they were working as parking lot attendants in Hollywood. You and I have a connection, too, really. Not connected with the Platters at all.
Aren't you like me? An Okie? Weren't you born in Oklahoma?
I'm from Muskogee, Oklahoma.
Well, I grew up not very far from there. I was born in Barnsdall.
Yeah.
And then I went to Webb City for my grandmother's house. And
up in Missouri.
In Missouri.
Near Joplin, as a matter of fact.
Right. It was between Joplin and Carthage, a little town called Carterville.
Carterville. I don't think I've ever been there, but...
Well, we had a notorious speed cop one time that was always... He'd sit on the outskirts of getting the people coming from Carthage to go to Joplin, and he'd bring them into the Justice of the Peace, and they just made tons of money.
Yeah, it probably supported the whole town.
It supported the whole town, yeah. With it, I think.
Now, you were a singer originally yourself, or at least you wanted to
that
be.
That was my main ambition. Uh-huh. Yes, it was. And I had gone through high school and all the contests and won a lot of contests in singing, and I'd made up my mind that I really wanted to be a singer.
So what'd you do, just pack up and go to Hollywood?
No, I took a long detour around.
Okay.
Because it so happened that when I was just in... The year I graduated was the year the war started, 1941, 42, and so I got involved with the war.
We now know how old you are, and you're still working, and Personality Productions doing great.
Every day.
And you have, you do lots of things, but the Platters is what I usually know you
about.
Well,
Platters were our specialty, but I handled many acts with Buck Ram. Over the years, we just had 15, 20, 30 acts going through here at least.
And we're going to get into how you met Buck Ram and the Platters, the history of the Platters,
and
everything about that as we go along. But first of all, the war came along, and you volunteered to work with USO, Red Cross,
no,
or something?
No, I was going to business college. I had completed high school in 1941. I had 1 year of shorthand, and I knew to be a good secretary, I had to have one more year or something of shorthand. So I enlisted at the Joyner School of Business College because I couldn't go up to Springfield. They offered me a scholarship on the basis of my singing, but my dad wouldn't let me go 60 miles away from home all by myself.
That's not all that far.
I know, but in those days, you know, he just would not hear of it. So I said, well, I've got to have this shorthand improved. And, you know, the reason I took up shorthand in the first place was because I could take my lyrics off of the radio on all the songs I wanted to learn. So everything tied with singing from day one.
A little incentive. In fact, your whole career was tied with singing. We'll get into that a little bit.
It sure was. Even though I never quite made it, I've had a ball.
So, during the war, where were you?
I was in Carthage, Missouri, going to school, and I took my lunch money. They were building a huge camp just 30 miles away.
You're talking about
at
an Army
camp.
Camp
Powder, Missouri. Big Army camp. Yeah, the Signal Corps. Big Signal Corps camp.
Okay, I took my basic training at Fort Leonard Wood on up.
Yeah, that was farther on.
Yeah, on up, right. Yeah, between Springfield and Rolla.
Right.
So you didn't leave home. Your dad got his way.
He got his way as far as the college was concerned. But I played hooky from school, took the bus and went down to Camp Crowder, which is just 30 miles, and put in my application at two different places. It was a huge army camp, all being in the big old barracks and everything. And came back on the bus, and about a week later, I got an offer to go to one of the jobs.
And so you went to work there, and in fact, you met your husband that way, right?
Well, after I got settled in with the Red Cross, one of my first concerns was to see if I could find places on the base.
Gene, you told me the story before. It's quite romantic, really. You're looking around for a place to sing. You found a job singing at the birthday party for the soldier, and you did. And he liked you so much, he married you, right? Boy, all the way back to World War II. Gene, let's take a break and play a song by the Platters. I have a reason for playing this song, and I'll tell you why when we get back.
Heavenly shades of night are falling. It's twilight time. Out of the mist, your voice is calling. It's twilight time. When purple colored curtains mark the end of day, I'll hear you, my dear, at twilight time. Deepening shadows gather splendor as day is done. Fingers of night will soon surrender the setting sun. I count the moments, darling, till you're here with me. Together, at last, at twilight night. Here, in the afterglow of day, we keep our rendezvous beneath the blue in the sweet and same old way. I fall in love again as I did then. Deep in the dark, your kiss will fill me like days of old, lighting the spark of love that fills me with dreams untold. Each day I pray for evening just to be with you. Together, at last, at twilight time. In the afterglow of day, we keep our rendezvous beneath the blue. In the sweet and simple way, I fall in love again. Will thrill me like days of old, lighting the spark of love that fills me with dreams untold. Each day I pray for evening just to be with you. Together, at last, at twilight time. Together, at last, at twilight time.
On Gene Bennett's stereo in the background, we can hear Twilight Time, which incidentally was written by Buck Ram. He was a co-writer. This version in the background we're listening to is a group that Buck found, the Three Sons. And they had a top 20 song in 1947 called Twilight Time. Hey, we'll be back to talk more about Buck Ram and the Platters, so don't go away. Marvelous Marv Grand Canyon Tours offers you a unique look at one of the great wonders of the world, the Grand Canyon.
Been at the Grand Canyon area most of my life, so pretty much grew up in the area and know quite a few things that the common tourist doesn't know. And I need to avoid all the people and stuff and try to take them to secluded areas.
A day excursion, personally, conducted by Marvelous Marv.
Yeah, we started about 8 o'clock in the morning. We're done about 4:30. Absolutely. And I have a little photo CD disc for him with 1,000 of my favorite pictures and some video. And
no other tour offers so much, and no other personalized tour offers a better price.
No, I'm still the same, and I'm the most reasonable price tour of the Grand Canyon. No, $85 a person. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Call 928-707-0291 or check him out at MarvelousMarv.com. That's the theme from the Lawrence Welk TV show. In fact, Gene Bennett, we'll get to that in a little bit. Hell, on why we are playing this as a bumper music. Welcome back to the show. In fact, you worked for Lawrence Welk, I think. We'll talk about that in a moment. But it was really destined, I guess, that you would go to Hollywood. After all, Lana Turner, wasn't she a cousin or something?
She was my first cousin. And it was through...
So show business was in your blood, I guess.
I guess so. My mother died when I was born, and so I went to live with my grandmother Turner. And I always heard about my older cousin. She was 2 years older than me. And one night when I was growing up and in high school, we went to the show all Saturday night. We went to the Saturday Night Theater.
Sure.
And I saw my aunt walk down the aisle after we came in and sat down with this beautiful girl. And I thought, I wonder who that is, you know. So I called the next day, and sure enough, it was my cousin Julia Jean, whom I was named after. And... So I went over to visit with her, and then she went on up to Chicago to visit with her aunt, our aunt up there. And when she came back, my aunt worked for a newspaper. She worked for the Sun in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And I think she pulled some strings, too, because when Lana went back to Hollywood, it wasn't too awfully long after that she was discovered.
Well, probably still. Another, as you know, these overnight discoveries aren't overnight.
Yeah, they talked about the soda fountain and all that, you know. But I think my aunt from the Sun Times in Chicago pulled some very big strings and got her before the directors. And her first picture was just a walk-on, and she just was sensational. So.
Well, she was a beautiful woman, no doubt about it, and a pretty good actress.
Yes, she was.
You have to hand that to her.
Yes, she was.
Now, I want to get to how you got to Hollywood. I mean, the war was over. I thought you were still in Missouri.
I was in Joplin, and I worked as a bookkeeper at a job.
You know who was from Joplin, Missouri? It's pretty famous, Bob Cummins.
Yes, he was. Yes. Yeah. And so I auditioned for a part up in Central Park that they were putting on.
Uh-huh.
And I auditioned and I won the
Fantastic.
Lead in that. And that's where I got a chance to prove to my husband that I could sing and dance and act.
And so
as a result, he got an invitation to come out to join his cousin in California. And he said, why don't we do that? That'll give you a chance maybe to see what you can do. And that's how we ended up in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Or at MGM,
actually. Now, do you remember any of the people you saw in person as they walked up?
Oh, yes. I saw Gracie Allen come out. I saw Jane Powell, and she was dressed in one of those gorgeous ice cream cone dresses that she wore. And Donald O'Connor.
You know, you mentioned Gracie Allen. George Burns, you just showed me a picture of him at his last performance at Caesars before he passed away. And you and the Platters were invited backstage, I take it.
Yes, they were inviting acts from all over the city to come over for the month that he was there, and in honor of his birthday, and they had a big old permanent cake that they'd wheel out, and everyone came back to wish him happy birthday. And
I understood he actually did a dance on a little soft
shoe.
He did.
He looked frail. but he was robust with his voice. And then when he'd walk out on stage, the gentleman that walked him out there with kind of holding his arm, he said that the minute that he, just before he opened the curtain for him to step out, said he pulled himself up straight as an arrow and walked out there just with, you know, so robust with every ounce of strength and everything that he had. And then he'd get up there and do a little, he'd sit, they had a nice comfortable chair, he'd sit down a while, he'd get up and he'd do a little dance across the stage and keep these silly, cute stories going the whole time. Everyone just loved him.
Yeah, it's that's one of the things about Las Vegas. It's a lot of entertainment history here.
Yes, there is. And I loved it in Hollywood, too, because I saw many people in Hollywood, Ethel Merman, Jimmy Durante. Jimmy Durante, I had an artist called Bach Yen. She was a Vietnamese girl that we found down in San Diego. A fellow, a sailor, had brought her home, didn't know what to do with her, so Buck and I ended up managing her and took her mother in with her because they were very protective, you know, their daughter. And one time she was, while she was here, she ran into Frank Sinatra, and he invited her to come to the show. And she said, well, yes, all right, that's wonderful, but I'll have to bring my mother and my manager. So that night when Frank Sinatra introduced her to his audience, he said, wouldn't you know my luck? He said, just my luck. She's not only got her, she said, not only brought her mother with her, she's got her manager with her, insisted on that. So it was funny.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned Buck Ram and the entertainment agency and all that. Oh, that's an interesting story how you met him. You were actually, I guess, out peddling your wares.
I was out. Yeah, they told me while I was going to this school supposedly to help you get started in Hollywood, why one of the keyboard men that I was introduced to said, Gene, you got to get out, pound the pavement. You can't sit and wait for it to come. You have to get out there and do it. So I said, okay. So I started out one morning at one end of Hollywood Boulevard and went all the way down, Sunset rather. As I was going down the street, I walked into this Carolina Bronson's agency and I said, look, I have been going into every agency here and they all want to know if I can, they don't ask if I can sing, they want to know what I'm going to wear and if I've got arrangements. I said, where do you go to hear somebody to play? She said, well, there's a man down the hallway. She said, I think he handles some singers. Why don't you go down and talk to him? So I went down, and he was back in the back with had two little rooms. And he was kind of in the back, and I said, hello? And he stuck his head around the corner, and he said, yes. I said, I am here trying to find somebody that will hear me sing. I said, nobody wants to hear me sing, and they want to know what I'm going to wear and if I've got arrangements and all that. He said, well, come on in. He said, let's talk. So I made arrangements to go take my compass back, and I sang for him, and he thought I had a very, very nice voice. And he said, he asked questions about what I could do or what I did and so forth. And I said, well, I'm stenographer and bookkeeper and, you know, office worker mostly. And he said, well, I could sure use somebody. And he said, I'll help you if you help me. I said, well, you got a deal. And that's how it started.
And you guys had an arrangement for life.
That's how it started. It became a lifetime arrangement.
Now, Buck, that must have been 1952, 53, somewhere.
Yeah,
there.
About 1952.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Did he have any acts at that point that became major?
He was working for a few country artists, and he would take them into Gold Star. And there was a girl that he was very interested in. Her name was Mary Rose Bruce. She was a blonde, blue-eyed, good-looking girl, and she wrote very well, and she'd come to him as to look at her work. And he found out she had a terrific voice, so he ended up recording her and getting her sold to RCA Victor. Her name was Mary Rose Bruce, is how she was billed. And then there was a young country singer by the name of Audie Andrews that had a terrific voice, and he got both of them on RCA Victor.
So he had experience with major labels. I believe wasn't the Planters when you guys was that Mercury or who'd you have that?
We signed with Mercury on the Platters, mm-hmm. But Buck Ram had I'll Be Home for Christmas and Twilight Time, and a number of hits and had also played with the Dorsey Brothers. He played sax.
Yeah, why don't you tell us a little bit about Buck Graham, because he was quite a talented fellow.
He was tremendously talented. He had put in this.
He wrote. He was a writer.
He was
composer.
He was a good songwriter, and he played saxophone. He paid his dues by going out on the road with various bands over the years, early years. And he grew up in Chicago. He had two brothers, and his mother wanted to be a lawyer, so he not only studied law and got his shingle, he also said, I'm going to be a musician. And so he started arranging. When he finally went into New York, he got the notice of some bands in New York, in Chicago, and they invited him to come on in. So that's how he ended up in New York. And he started working for a music company that would bring in, that new songs would come in, and he would make arrangements for various bands. And then they would have him take those to the bands and try to talk them into, you know. So he helped sell music that way. And he ended up arranging for many well-known, orchestra leaders. Count Basie, he said he remembered very precisely taking this arrangement to him. And he laid it out on the piano and Basie says, Buck, he said, why don't you just pass out the music to the musicians? And he said, and you run them through it. You run them through the arrangement. So Buck said, okay. And Basie sat there and he put them all through their paces, and Basie, you know, never touched the keyboard. But when Buck said, okay, let's do it again, Basie went in, and Buck said he played every note that was written on there, but he said he knew he didn't read that music. He couldn't read the music.
He did that by ear.
But he did it strictly by ear, and he said it was note for note practically the way I wrote it.
You remember the name of that song?
No, I don't remember now.
Yeah,
but that was way in Buck's very early career.
Okay, since you don't remember the song, Gene, I'm going to play my favorite Count Basie tune of all times. His version of April in Paris.
Thank you. one more time. One more once.
Music arranger for big bands in the late 40s and early 50s.
Later
in the 50s, he developed the Platters sound. What a sweet sound it was, too, huh? We will be back with Jean Bennett, who will tell us more about Buck Ram. She worked with him for many, many, many years.
And also about the Platters.
As we continue with our history of the Platters. From Las Vegas, I'm Jerry Pippin. This is brought to you in part by Fate Magazine. Tales of the Strange and the Unknown. Every month in Fate Magazine.
Fate!
Fate Magazine has actually been published continuously since 1948. That makes it the longest-running publication of its kind. From psychics and spiritualists, archaeological hotspots and fringe science, to authoritative UFO and paranormal investigations, Fate articles are factual, informative, and entertaining. Subscribe to Fate Magazine today. Simply go to FateMag.com, FateMag.com, or check it out at your local newsstand. Fate Magazine is a favorite for people looking for answers and for people looking for entertainment.
Fate.
Tales of the Strange and the Unknown.